Today on the stuff that your bookkeeper isn't telling you, we are talking about hiring and some of those factors that you want to consider. So if you're a law firm or business that is looking to hire employees or contractors, today's topic will be a helpful resource for you. So stay tuned for today's episode. So welcome back to the show, and I want to welcome in the co-host of the show, Lola Turner. Today, we're going to have a great conversation. Lola, when we talked about, you know, this being the topic of hiring, you know, how did you initially feel about that conversation?
I felt like it was a very relevant topic. I think that there's a lot of news out there, right, on unemployment, on the labor. We're recording this on Monday, Labor Day Monday. Ooh, look at that. Labor Monday or Labor Day. And one of the things that I think on Friday, they just released like the news report on the how the economy is performing, the number of jobs added, et cetera. There's also, Terrell, you and I have been talking about this, the discussion about the minimum wage increase. So I think this is a very relevant topic, especially because from our perspective, on the stuff your bookkeeper isn't telling you show, we focus on helping you understand, like, not just, hey, this is what's on the news and this is what's coming out, but really, how do you take that information and how does that apply to your business? So I'm excited to talk about it. And we were doing some things in the background. So I'm looking forward to kind of sharing what we the feedback and advice we have for the listeners on the show today.
You know, I think that brings up a very important point, because it seems like these days politicians are constantly talking about labor wages. They're talking about, you know, whether it's a livable wage, whether it's talking about increase in minimum wage, whether it's talking about the benefit of unions, and whether it's talking about, you know, just workforce. And, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting, and we can talk a little bit more about this, is when a lot of business owners and law firm owners are hearing things about, like, hey, the unemployment rate is the lowest it's ever been.
Right.
It's just like some of the, like, I think most people have no idea, like, well, what is that supposed to mean to me?
Like, yeah, no, I agree. And I think even for us, like, we were having the conversation before we started the podcast. And, you know, I was just looking at the numbers on the report before we recorded the show. And it said, hey, unemployment is down 3.5, or the unemployment rate as of August is at 3.7%. And, you know, we're 0.2%, a little bit higher than what we did in July. But as of July, it was like, you know, I think they said it, this is the lowest it's been in the last 20 years. And I remember, like, I brought that to you, and Terrell was like, you know, the math person in you is just like, okay, but compared to what though? Like, and I think that is always the interesting factor. Sometimes the news will share these numbers and, you know, you're like, okay, the lowest it's been in 20 years. Like, that's such a great headline. But in reality, like, what does that really mean when you look at the numbers behind those percentages, right? And so, like, what were some of the things that we found, Terrell, that I thought was very interesting? And I'm like, this is kind of important to understand when you're looking at these numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things you if you're looking at unemployment, some people then start asking questions like, okay, what does the job participation rate look? You know, when you look at, hey, the number of people in the population that are actually trying to get a job, because I do think oftentimes, like, that unemployment number, it's a little misleading about what that means, because it doesn't mean, like, hey, the total number of people who don't have jobs. It's more of the number of people who are actively looking for jobs that don't have one. And then when you look at job participation and you see, well, I think, you know, we were just looking at purely based on the numbers, you know, from the job participation, it was something like, you know, 7+ million people that used to be looking for a job are just, they're based on the stats, they're not looking anymore. So it's just like, should they be considered part of that unemployment population or what? And I think, you know, different things like that become very interesting to the subject matter.
Yeah. And I think it's always one of the things I learned from our conversation and my takeaway is it's always good. And I think it's always good to take a look at the what the numbers behind mean, right? And I think for us as accountants and even a firm is one number can be, it's kind of like it reminds me of some conversations about like, hey, the number, you can tell whatever story you want to tell with numbers, right? You can tell the story of, hey, like even when you look at your revenue, like for example, I can say, hey, my revenue was lower compared to prior year, but hey, higher quarter over quarter. Like depending on how you want to tell the story, there's always a way to make it look better than it really is or look worse than it really is. And so I think as a business owner, as a law firm, like where you need to pay attention to is more importantly, like, what does this number mean for me? So like, for example, like Terrell, you said with the unemployment rate, like if we hadn't had a conversation about it and said, okay, the baseline of 20 years ago is completely different because you have, I think it was like what, 17 million people that have like either joined or exited the labor force or that are considered in the employable number. And then you have the number of people that are looking for jobs has also gone down. So all of those are important. When someone just comes and tells you, hey, your percentage is going down, like you have to really be able to kind of understand the why and the what behind the numbers. And so I think even the same thing, like I'm actually interested to talk about this and I kind of want to get your perspective because we've been talking about this all week, the minimum wage increase. So
this one I will say is interesting because, you know, you have different states that are looking to change their minimum wage number. Like even now, like when people think about, you know, the federal minimum wage, I think the federal minimum wage may be like $7.25. And you know this one.
I didn't know that. $7.25. That's really low.
I think that's the number. I think that's the number. Now, one of the things that you find is that even in there are some places where they don't pay $7.25. I mean, some places are paying higher just because they're competing. You know, I think just the economics of the job market has just required people to pay more or whatever than the minimum wage. Now there are some places that are paying the minimum wage, like a lot of your small mom and pop restaurants and stuff like that. A lot of them are paying the minimum wage. And when you look at the numbers of their business, like they can't afford to do much more than that for some of these mom and pop restaurants when I've looked at their numbers. But I think just overall, like you have different states that are trying to, you know, increase their rate. Like you have states like California where I think minimum wage may already be at 15 and they're trying to take it to 22 for fast food workers. And then you have other parts of the country that are looking at like 18, 14 or whatever to where, you know, like when you see a lot of that, I think the immediate thing for people is to then have a feeling about, well, these people need to go get a job or, hey, well, these people should be paid more. And it's, I think, a lot of people get into those conversations, but I think as a business owner, you have to look at it from the perspective of running a business. Like, what does this mean for how I'm gonna, whether I agree or I disagree, I still have to think through, hey, what does this mean for my business? And like, how do I move forward in light of, hey, what this number is going to be or could be?
Yeah, and I think my favorite phrase in this moment, which I love to say this, is men lie, women lie, the numbers don't lie. Okay, so regardless of how you feel about the push for California to increase the minimum wage, the unemployment rate, the fact that, you know, kind of I think the push in the media has been, hey, people have, you know, people have more options, one. And then two, it's, you know, people are paying more. Like, for example, I think it was McDonald's that started offerings for some of the roles they offer health benefits, right? So like people are competing to get talent and to employ people. And so regardless of how you feel, it really just comes down to how does your business need to adjust to be able to be competitive in this market. And I think it really comes down to really taking a step back and understanding what exactly your business needs in terms of hiring. And then more importantly, like a strategy to go about doing that, which I think is so important.
Yeah, because I do think, you know, you have that dynamic of when it comes down to compensation. It's there are some businesses that are operating on very tight margins. And if you're operating on tight margins and your labor cost goes up or you start adding benefits, like there really isn't much room to do other things in your business. And, right. and I think that's something that a lot of business owners have to think about, because if you're going to grow, you will have that impact of either you're going to need to improve your resources, you're going to need to improve your processes, or you're going to need to hire more people, or maybe a combination of any or all of those right. things altogether. And I think you have to weigh the reality of seeing like, okay, all right, what does this mean and what changes do we need to make? Because yeah. I think if you don't look at it that way, like say, you just end up getting into these political debates with people. Like, because I've been going on Facebook and I've been like reading the comments that people have. And because, you know, I think it's helpful, one is as we make content like this, I think it's helpful to make it contextual to what are people right. talking about? Like, what's right. that and perspective what we can add?
Right. And where people's headspaces, right? Because, yeah, that's a valid point. I try to stay away from that because maybe because it's just for me, it's just too dramatic. Like, there's so much drama, like people calling people out. I'm just like, okay, does this even have anything to do with you? So it's always interesting to see. But that's a valid point. I think, you know, being able to tailor the content for our audience is important.
Yeah, I mean, because I do think that a lot of times, I mean, and we're living in this time now, where, and we'll probably have another episode conversation about it, where we talk about, you know, just decision making in light of all these things going on, whether it's, you know, ESG standards, whether, you know, it is things coming down to like minimum wage, whether it's things that the different laws that impact, you know, all of these different factors. I think some to a certain extent, my personal opinion, I think politicians want you to care about the political nature of these things. Right. Whereas, and even with a lot of like media outlets, they want you to care about, they want you to care about those topics in a way that draws your attention to them and what they're doing. But I think often as a business owner, you have to think about those topics as it relates to how am I gonna, like, you know, care for my business, care for my clients, care for my people? Like, how are we gonna navigate this as a business owner? And though, like, politicians and media, they're not thinking about it from your perspective. They're thinking right. about how can we present this in a way to get you to pay more attention to what I'm doing or what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think ultimately I would say I've seen a lot of situations where when things are announced like this, like minimum wage, increasing, you know, unemployment going down and people having more options, oftentimes the default response a lot of times is fear, right? What does this mean for my business? Oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to pay people more, especially if you have a service-based business, right? Like where people can, like we were talking about this and I'm excited to kind of show that comparison, but like where people have options and they can choose whether they want to do A or do B. But essentially, I think it's important to come back to the question of what do the numbers say, right? Step out of the fear and understand what the numbers are telling you. So I think a lot of times, even in situations like this, for example, with a minimum wage, people might be like, well, I'm kind of reluctant to hire now because I don't know what the market is going to look like, or prices are going up or cost is going up to hire employees. So I don't want to hire quite yet. But if you wait too long, there's impact to your business, right? Versus if you make an informed decision and look at the numbers and say, hey, this is what I need to look at before you make that decision, completely different space versus just not taking action because you're afraid.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is very true, because I think when you start to look at the numbers, it may give you a different perspective. And I'm not going to lie, sometimes when you look at the numbers, it may make you a little more nervous.
Yeah, because I think the one, but I mean, the good thing with that, though, is you know how to act, because sometimes the numbers are not as bad as you think they are, right? Like sometimes the numbers are not, like, for example, it's not an end all for your business. Mm-hmm. You might just need to re-strategize how you're doing things. And I think for me, I feel like it's better to know, even if it's bad, it's better to know than not to know at all, because I think that's the strategy. It just causes more anxiety. Personally, for me, when I don't know the numbers, I don't know something, like you can, for your for your benefit, and I say that in quotation mark, you might be like, I'm just going to avoid this. I'm not going to look at it. I'm not going to think about it. But you're thinking about it. It's coming to your mind. It's causing more anxiety. So just put the numbers down on paper and just have a conversation about it. But
no, yeah. I totally agree. Because I mean, I am a huge fan of that approach of even if the numbers are bad, or even if the numbers will in the short term bring a little bit more anxiety, let's be honest with ourselves. Let's take a look at them and let's start to ask ourselves some different questions.
Right.
For example, I'll share some numbers of some, like when it comes down to like certain law, we work with a lot of law firms and service-based businesses. So I'll share some numbers. And what I'm sharing is these are different common positions that these type of companies hire. You know, we did some, looked online, looking at some market research or just, you know, looking at salary ranges for what the salary, if you hire this person full-time, you divide it by the number of, let's say, working hours in a year, which gets you down to like what an hourly rate would look like. And then in the last column, what, for those that are listening to the podcast, what's happening in the last column is that I'm saying, okay, all right, what's the monthly cost plus the portion of taxes that the employer has to pay? And one
I'll
of the
add
things
this
you,
to the, I'll also add this to the show notes as a link on PDF okay. So people can access it. Yeah.
Perfect. So one of the things that, you know, that jumps out to me is, let's say, for example, you know, if you're a firm and you're hiring a paralegal, well, if you're used to paying a paralegal, you know, $45,000 a year, well, $45,000 a year translated into an hourly rate is $21.60 an hour. Now, if you're in California and the minimum wage for working fast food is $22 an hour, like now that paralegal is sitting back making, you know, maybe looking at this differently. At a paralegal who doesn't have the aim of saying like, hey, I eventually want to become a lawyer myself or right. go to law school right. or hey, right. I just really want to work in a, if they're there to say, hey, I took this job because it's a job I can do and it pays well. Well, when there are other jobs where the minimum wage is $22 an hour, they may be looking and considering making a different decision then, because purely just looking at the numbers, it's just like, hey, fast food is an opportunity to give them, or even if it's not fast food, it's just some other type of job that pays minimum wage. It now gives them a potential to make just as much or maybe even a little bit more money doing that job as opposed to, you know, the paralegal job that they were doing for you.
Yeah. And one of the things I'm actually looking at is like $45,000 salary in California. Listen. Ooh, that's tight.
Yeah.
That is really tight. And I was just looking at the average, like it's like for California specifically between $53,000 and $84,000 per year for a paralegal is what the salary estimate is. So if you put 84,
and let's just how much? In,
so it's between $54,000 and $84,000 for a paralegal in California.
So your average paralegal is probably going to fall somewhere in the middle of that. So like, let's say what, like around 70s? 70?
Yes, it's 60, 65 grand.
65.
All right. So it's like $31 in California, I guess, would be the hourly rate compared to $20. So there's a good, gap there. But I know one of the things that people have been saying and what I've been reading in the news is California, which I don't know why. I mean, no offense to California. California is usually the trendsetter when it comes to labor wages. So like when California sets $21 an hour, there are going to be similar states like maybe Illinois or stuff like that that will try to follow suit and set, you know, it might not be $21, but it could be relatively close. And so the question I think is to ask yourself is, how much of a gap do you have between a technical job like a paralegal and someone just going to work at McDonald's?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that is something to strongly consider, because where I think it hits, even if you're not in California, let's say if you're in a different state where, you know, labor cost isn't as high. Even when you start to look at things like an office administrator, or an office admin. I mean, when you're looking at, you know, we looked at kind of national averages was around like $35,000 a year, which is like $1,680 an hour. Now, for a person to work in an office administrator, kind of like a secretarial job. But when you start raising minimum wage, like the minimum wage at other opportunities start to compete with that. And so one of the things that you know, that firms have to think about and start considering is, all right, if I want a really good person to fill this role, not just a person who can answer the phone, because I was having a conversation with a law firm, you know, about a week and a half ago. And one of the issues that they were having is they were like, well, she's, you know, she's in a state where, you know, minimum wage is much lower, but she was, you know, paying $15 an hour. And she was like, I just can't find, you know, good talent or people who want to show up for $15 an hour, to where it's just like, okay, you now have a decision to make. Is like, how do you pivot if you have to increase the compensation that you're offering for that position? It's how do you pivot your business, or what other things do you start changing so that your business can afford to do that? Because I do think a lot of times when you hear in the news where, you know, you hear people like, oh, they should just raise the wages. And a lot of times they may be referring to some of like your bigger companies in the world. Like, well, I'm saying like the bigger companies who can afford to just make that change. But if you're a smaller or medium sized growing firm, like you may not have the luxury of making that change. Like, because I've seen businesses that are doing, let's say, you know, $750,000 a year, like they may be doing $750,000 in, you know, or even up to like $1.5 million in revenue. But when you look at their margins, like it's still pretty tight. Like they don't have the luxury of like these billion-dollar companies that just say, oh, we're just going to take a raise and it's going to cost the company like $200 million and we can absorb it. Where it's like, if you're a smaller business, like that small change could have a big impact.
Right. I agree. And I also think like it's also not roses. Like, I mean, just to be completely blunt, like when companies that are that large increase prices or increase salary or payments to their employees, like those stuff get reflected in the prices. Right. So like either way, somebody's paying for it. So I think it's one of those things where I think it's so important to look at the numbers. And like one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking, Terrell, is just the example of the lawyer that you were talking with, who's like, you know, at $15 an hour, like my options are just not the greatest. And I think one of the things you have to understand is quality, right? So the lower you pay, you might get a lower pool of quality candidates, and the higher you pay, you know, at least kind of helps. It helps, what's the word, filter through people who are, you know, a bit more, you can get a bit more quality. So that's something to be mindful of, right? And I think in some roles, I feel like, Terrell, you can kind of work with it. You know what I mean? Like when somebody isn't the greatest and stuff like that. But in other roles, like, for example, that example you were telling me about, that paralegal or the person that was didn't have her stuff ready for court and stuff were missing. Like in those kind of situations, it's like, hey, there are certain roles in your business where you can't afford to have somebody that is subpar, right? So I think just being honest with yourself, and even if it's like trade-offs, like, hey, where can I afford to, where do I really need to invest, right, for specific roles and make sure that I'm hiring top talent? And then, hey, where can I make some accommodations to where, hey, if this person isn't the best or at the top tier of performers, like I can offset it with maybe some other members of the team. But I really think it's important to just be honest with yourself when it comes to evaluating that.
Yeah, I mean, and I will say is, I think for businesses that are in the growth stage, one of the challenges that I've seen them do is they're only thinking about it financially. So they go and they get like, they pick the least expensive person. But when it comes down to it, if you really looked at that person's performance, that person is like a C+, maybe a, you know, C+, maybe a B-. And if you're probably a not growing a B-, company,
probably not even a B-.
And I would say, I mean, if you're a growing company, like, you can't afford to make too many bad hires, or it's going to slow you down. Like, you know, and I know, like, we both work through, like, you know, you know, mega companies, some like the world's, like the Fortune 100 companies, to where like those type of companies, you can afford to have a bad hire every now and then. And I've worked with some people who weren't the best hire for the position. They weren't a bad person. It's just they weren't the best hire for the position that they were in. And you can afford to do that when you have, you know, a finance team that is 3,000 people. Like, you're going to have enough good people in there to pick up the slack for some people who may not be in the right position. But when you're a growing firm, and let's say, you know, the firm is only 25 employees, I mean, you can't afford to, you know, have that many bad hires. And I do think when it comes down to hiring, you know, great quality talent, is sometimes the pricing is going to be a little bit higher. But I think that that shouldn't scare people, because I do think there are some things that you can do, in which I've worked with plenty of businesses where we have worked on strategies on how do you better position your business and how do you better structure your business financially so you can afford to hire that talent without killing the business at the same time.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think I think it goes back to just doing the work ahead of time, right, to understand. Mm-hmm. Because I think one of the challenges oftentimes is you're growing and you're growing really fast. And sometimes you grow faster than, you know, you kind of grow to a point then you're like, crap, like I can't do all this by myself. Like, hey, I need more people. And so sometimes it's not intentional. Sometimes it's just there's a delay on your end as a business owner to hire because you're like, hey, I got this. I'm a one-man shop. I could figure it out by myself. And then it just leads to you being burnt out. So there's just so many. I don't think it's ever intentional when it comes to, well, at least at the beginning. But you need to keep an eye on it to make sure that, hey, you're acting quickly when you do find yourself in that position where your law firm is growing, your business is growing, and quickly react to bring that in. So I guess to kind of focus on more practical tips, Darrell, like what would be some of the things that you would say, hey, okay, you know, they come to the end of themselves. We're growing. I realize I need to hire people. I realize I need to do something. Like, what are some of the things you think, hey, these are things you need to be looking at, like start here?
Yeah. I think the first one, I want to piggyback off of something you just said about, you know, that people getting burnt out and waiting too long to hire. I think the first thing is really starting to look ahead of really just like, hey, what are we spending our time doing? Because I think is like many businesses, you may start off with just the owner or just the founders.
Right.
And as you're doing different stuff, it's just really having to do that assessment on like, where are we currently spending our time? And then I think asking yourself, what are the things that have to get done for us to grow? And if you start looking at like which things are most valuable, and I'll say practically even for myself within the TL Turner Group, one of the things when we started off, I was doing a ton of marketing stuff, of creating content, putting that out there, because that's what put me in front of, you know, potential clients. Well, when potential clients started calling and I had to like, okay, I can't keep doing all the stuff that I was doing around content, because now I have to shift my attention to actually doing, you know, the sales calls and stuff like that. So one of the things we shifted to is how do we get a virtual assistant that could do some of the stuff that I was doing on the content piece so that they can keep bringing more people into the pipeline that I would have people to have sales calls with. And I think as we started looking at that, practically what we did was we looked at it and said, okay, all right, how many leads do I need to make sure that we can cover the cost of this, you know, this new virtual assistant? And because we do a lot of recurring work, and I was like, okay, all right, if we onboard 3 new clients, that will, and they pay recurring monthly fees, those client fees will cover the cost of this virtual assistant. So within the first, I would say, 60 days, we were able to get enough leads to close enough new deals to where now that new person we hired, their cost is covered and they're continuing to do work that's sending more leads into the pipeline.
Yes, I think that's one thing, right? So if I was to break them into 2 points, I would say the first thing is understanding, like, what is the role? I think after you define, or maybe three things, first define what the responsibilities are that need to be done. And then once you define that, I think secondly would be to have an understanding of these roles, which that I'm trying to hire for, understanding the revenue generation that comes with that, right? What kind of revenue is this going to help generate? Like in your case, Terrell, I think it was critical, right, to be able to have the sales calls to then close clients. So that way you weren't spending time on marketing. So that free time allowed you to be able to do that. And then I would say, I think the third thing is, hey, the recurring pipeline of sales to be able to sustain, to continue to pay this virtual assistant that we hired to do the work. So that's kind of, those are the three things that I would kind of break it down into. Is there anything that you would say?
But I think we should go a little bit deeper into that one. So if we go, step back. I think into all three of them, because I think there is a little bit more for people. So what was the first one that you mentioned in the list?
The first one I think that you said is just understanding the roles, right? So like, what exactly is it that needs to be done for my business to grow? I mean, I think that's the first one.
When looking at that, I think one of the things that I always recommend for different business owners is to actually write it out. Like, what are you doing? Where are you spending your time? Because that is when I think you start to see things that you probably have just been overlooking. Because I think for us, we did that to where I sat down and I literally drew like squares and lines on a page and said, well, when we onboard a new client, what is the process? And I wrote out all the steps. And when we're releasing new content, what is the process? Write out the steps. And I think once you get a view of that picture of like what's involved, then asking yourself, all right, who's doing what step? And I wrote it out. And one of the things that I realized is my name was attached to a lot of that stuff. And I was just like, okay, all right, that's who's doing it now. Who else on the team can do it so we can free up more of my time to do things like sales calls and stuff? And then when we started looking at that, that's where we came to the conclusion of at the time, we didn't have someone on the team that could already do it. So that's when we started looking and saying, well, we probably need to bring someone else additional on the team. We need to hire someone new. And what are the things that person is going to do? And I think that really helps with step one for a lot of businesses. It's just really writing out, what are you doing? Who's doing it? And then who should be doing it? Because you want your most expensive employees, even if that includes you, if you're paid through payroll, you want your most expensive team members working on the more valuable things, because you don't want your most expensive employee answering calls that an office administrator can answer. You want them focused on more valuable work in the firm or in the business.
Yeah, and I think the benefit also to that, the monetary benefit, is once you have that mapped out, then you can basically have an understanding of, do you need to hire someone full time? Do you need to hire someone part time? Does this person need to be salary or can they be hourly? Like all of those things, like writing that down on paper helps you really evaluate that. Because for example, when we went through the exercise the first time, we had hired an assistant and an admin to kind of help some of the things that we were doing. And then when we went and reviewed and revised it again, as the business grew, we realized, hey, we need somebody full time instead of part time, right? And so I think doing those things helps you really have kind of the numbers to back the decision that you're making. So you're not just saying, hey, I want to hire someone full time, and then you're not maximizing the person and you've invested money in this and it's not really generating a benefit. Or you hire someone and then you're understaffed because you didn't consider, hey, additional things and additional processes that were going to be added. So I think I would say that's probably the biggest financial benefit to making that list and going through those processes before you hire.
Awesome. Now, what was the second point that you mentioned?
The second point that I mentioned was the basically understanding what, once you define what the person's role looks like their revenue generation. So like how much revenue is this person going to bring in? Or I guess in your case, how much revenue is this person doing this job going to allow whoever was handling this role to be able to generate? So yeah, what's the benefit?
That one can be a little tricky because I do think there are some people who are directly driving revenue. And then there are some people who, you know, may indirectly drive revenue to where, let's say, for example, we take a law firm, a paralegal is typically going to do legal work that the firm can bill for. Now, if you're doing flat fee arrangements, every hour they spend is not something you bill for. So I think it can be a little tricky, but I think the overall thing that we started doing with that, when we looked at our firm, it's like the person we needed to hire was on the marketing, which fed pipeline, which eventually turned into leads, who could eventually turn into clients. And I think if just having to do that is we had to take a step back and say, hey, if I add this person who is not directly, you know, we're not billing clients directly for the work that they do, then I had to take a step back and say, hey, well, if I'm doing sales and this person is helping feed the pipeline, I have to make sure, like, hey, are we going to see enough increase in the number of clients to cover the total cost of this whole marketing pipeline team? Like, how much are we spending there from like the ads we're doing, paying this person? It's just, is there enough business coming through to cover the cost? And I think for a lot of firms where, let's say, for example, with law firms, because we work with a lot of law firms that are still doing hourly, one of the things we usually help them out with is an employee ROI calculator, where we kind of go through and say, well, what is this person going to cost you? What are their targets going to be as far as how much revenue they need to generate? And then what's the multiple on that? Are they generating three times what they cost? Are they generating two times what they cost? And I think sometimes having a very clear target of knowing, like, hey, if I'm going to hire these people, I need to make sure we generate, you know, what, two times what these people cost, to make sure that we can cover their costs plus any of the additional overhead we incur by hiring them. And I think when you start thinking like that, I think it starts to help you really understand how to balance cash flow and your staffing needs.
Yeah, no, agreed. And I think also the other perspective is in situations where you may not be able to quantify, like in the case of a law firm or a paralegal, you may not be able to quantify exactly the, I guess, by billable hours or whatever. One of the things that I would ask myself is, in a situation like that, is this person, like, for example, if I think about in my case, was our marketing assistant's role, like what she was taking on, did it give me more time to focus more on the strategy or to focus more on the things that are not being done but are extremely important to the business? And she's focusing more on some of the recurring tasks. And I think I'm still learning and I'm still not there 100%, but I think that the reality is, when it comes to being a business leader or being a business owner, right, there's things when you think about like the strategy of the business or kind of where it is that you're going, short-term, long-term goals, that really the people that are admins or that are employees of the business are not really going to be the ones to tell you what your strategy is, right? So part of that is being able to think about kind of the strategy and the big picture to say, hey, this is what we're doing. And then aligning what that person's doing day to day with that strategy. And if you're so into the details, right, and you're so into the details, it makes it hard for you to kind of step out and think through it. And so I think some of those maybe non-monetary benefits where it's like, hey, when it comes to thinking about the big picture of how you're running the marketing strategy or whatever it is hiring this person really freeing up your time to go do value add tasks, or are you still spending time doing non-value add tasks because, you know, you haven't really defined a set process of what this person should be managing? So I think that's important.
I want to ask a question on that, because you and I both have worked
as long as you're not asking me a question.
Major companies. Like, you and I have both worked in major companies. And one of the things that you would run into, like when we would do business cases, one of the things that I ran into a lot is You know, people say, oh, this is going to save us, you know, 3 hours on the process. Mm. And it's just like, okay, is that a real, like, is that like when we save these 3 hours, is right. that person going to go do something else? Or yeah. they're just going to like, is that a real benefit? Like when, yeah. when do you find that when you do business cases with different business owners or in different companies?
Yeah, I do. Because the reality is you really have to measure it to understand what the value is, right? And I think personally, I'll give myself as an example. When we hired our virtual assistant or our marketing assistant, for example, I was so used to having overall oversight of the content process, right? And it really took me some time, and I'm still not there, to step away from, hey, like, how this stuff gets edited and how this stuff is scheduled and all that, because, hey, that's great, but you have somebody that you're paying that can kind of get it to a good enough level to where it might not be perfect or might not be like you want it. But the reality of the situation is it doesn't need to be perfect. And so I think sometimes, to go back to your question, to answer your question directly, it's hard to unless you are measuring specifically, like, you have KPIs or key performance indicators to say, okay, this is how we will determine if this has been beneficial or not. It's going to get lost in the details. And you really have to kind of hold yourself accountable, especially if you're a small business owner, to say, okay, has this person stepping into the process freed up my time to focus on things that are specifically important for whatever it is I'm focusing and working on? Or am I still finding that my time is significantly consumed by things that this person should be helping me do? Of course, in the beginning, it's going to take some time to kind of get comfortable and get that person up to speed. But after that point, you should be spending your time as a business owner focusing on kind of the big picture of things and the places where, like I said, you're not hiring people to do those things. Those are things only you can do. And so does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, and I was thinking about it from the perspective of, like, when we've done business cases, and let's say, you know, someone says, like, hey, you know, this new process is going to be a cost savings because it's going to save us 3 hours. And, like, the person who's doing this won't have to do this because it'll get done. And the question I would ask is, okay, all right,
paying them if we're saving
3 hours, is that person going to go do something else that is more value add?
Right.
Or are we just investing to save this 3 hours? We're still going to have to pay this person to now do what? And a lot
honestly,
of times,
yeah, I was going to say, honestly, I think a lot of times you're still paying the same amount of money. And I think the reason for that is because I think there's that fear of, like, okay, I've hired this person, but, like, okay, we kind of need to see if this yields the benefit. I think it, like, even in the business cases that we did, oftentimes there was a lag between when, like, for example, if this said, hey, we were going to save 3 people, these 3 people can be moved to another department and do that, blah, blah, blah. Oftentimes what I found is in certain organizations, they will keep those 3 people on and be like, yeah, let's just make sure we have a solid process, keep those 3 people. And then you're a year down the line and you're like, why are these 3 people still here? Like, the whole point of implementing and investing this money was so that, hey, these 3 people could go do something else. But now these 3 people are still in the business. Like, where is the cost savings here and where's the benefit? So I think sometimes it's like it's that balance between, like, okay, when you make the change, transitioning and then cutting it off and being like, all right, like, there's determining where that perfect point of transition is and just being like, hey, it's never going to be perfect, but we need to cut it off. We've made the change. We've made the justification for the business case. Let's move on and let's actually see if what we said we were going to yield actually was yielded.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that part brings up an important last point that I want to make. Something I've been working on with businesses is, as you were saying that, it brought it to mind of, like, working with some businesses where we looked at, hey, where their team was spending their time. And for some of it, we were able to automate some of those processes. And one of the things that I helped them understand is, hey, if we automate this, then what are the other valuable things that these people who were doing it, what else can they do? And how do we transition them to more value add work? And I think that's where, you know, that organization, you know, they were going through a challenge, which is a typical challenge I see with a lot of companies where they say, well, our people are overworked and we're having cash flow problems. And typically when that happens, I'm just like, okay, all right, there's a problem here we need to address. And what we tend to find is that your people are spending too much time doing low value work. So how do we get a process to do that, free up their time so we can then move them to something else that actually generates more value? And when you can do that, what I've seen is a lot of companies tend to see a lot more, a lot better financial performance after a transition like that. But you need both. You need to automate that process, but you also need to redirect those people to something else that is valuable.
Yeah, we have two great podcast episodes on automation and on processes. So check those out. But one of the things that you mentioned, Terrell, that really stood out to me was, I think, and this is a challenge I had, and I've had to learn this in our business as well. I think if you do this exercise, it's not always going to, the exercise of actually going through and defining what the responsibilities are, it's not always going to lead to you saying you need to hire more people. It may lead to you saying, hey, there's a bunch of stuff we're doing here that we don't need to do, right? Because, for example, the person was hired, you know, 5 years ago, and they've been doing this, they've been sending these newsletters, and you're like, we don't even need to be doing these newsletters anymore, right? So I think really having a list of the processes helps you evaluate two things. Like, okay, do I need to hire? Do I need not to hire? Right? I just need to take some of the some responsibilities off of certain people's plates. And one of the things that I say that is a great lesson that I've learned from you in running the business is the fact that just because, don't be afraid to say you don't have enough work to do, right? I think that was one of the things we have had to kind of decide with our team is, hey, we know this is what we're paying our team. Our team's full time. There will be situations and moments where there's gaps, but we need to understand those so that we can properly staff the team. And I think most people are afraid, employees are afraid to be like, yeah, I don't really have a lot of work to do, because then it's like, okay, well, then you don't really need my role. But that's not the reality. As a business owner, you kind of have to think about that is, okay, evaluating your team's bandwidth doesn't necessarily mean that, hey, you're going to fire some people, but it's just, how do you properly plan your team's workload to make sure that everyone's being used to their full capacity? And it might mean that it's not going to be like a straight shot where everyone has work all the time, and you just need to be comfortable with that. And so that's actually one thing that when you were talking, I thought about is, it's not always going to lead to you firing people. It's not always going to lead to you hiring people. It may just need to be a reshuffle in the responsibilities. And now it's such a good idea for you to go through the process of listing those processes, like you said, Terrell, because then you have that informed decision to decide, should I be hiring people? Do I need to reduce my workforce based on my workload? Or do I just need to reshuffle responsibilities? And you can't do that until you actually go through the process of defining what people are doing.
Absolutely. And like I said, and it we'll probably have a different episode and conversation where we dive into that a little bit more, because I do think that is a good point. And it's one of those things that I've kind of established, you know, at the TL Turner Group, is like, when we hire someone, when you do that exercise, you may realize like, hey, we're paying this person for $40 a week worth of work, but they only have 30 hours worth of work to do. And it's not like, hey, we need to fire them immediately. It's just like, okay, all right, you know what, how do we work through that and make sure that we are balancing, you know, them adding value, as well as balancing, you know, the cash flow that they're helping generate. And there's some unique ways of working through that and how we help our clients balance that. But that'll be for another discussion. But as always, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Until next time.